Welcome to another episode of Added Context, a podcast of compelling conversations centered on advancing and enhancing the human experience. I am your host, Michael Bolland. Welcome back to another episode of Adding Context. Next guest is a gentleman that I have had the privilege of practicing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu with, so I will let him introduce himself.
Good evening. My name is Brandon Foss. I'm a 43-year-old Jiu-Jitsu hobbyist slash instructor slash family man with a wife and one daughter.
So before we get into the fun stuff of Jiu-Jitsu, a little bit about you. Where were you born? Where are you from? What was your childhood like?
Yep. So, like I said, I'm 43 years old. I was born way back in the 1900s in Colorado, and then spent most of my life growing up in Maine until I was 17, signed papers to join the Marine Corps, and then from 18 to 22 did that, and then got out and kind of carried on with life, stayed in the South after that. So I spent a long, about 10, 15 years in South and North Carolina, and then wound up here in New Jersey about 11 years ago now, going on 11 years ago, for the quick breakdown.
I believe you had mentioned at some point that you were homeschooled. How did your education differ and your life differ from, say, people like me who went to public school?
There are a lot of good reasons to homeschool. The needs of the child, geographical reasons. You might have, medical reasons. My family didn't subscribe to any of those. It was really done for religious reasons. They didn't think that radical teachings like, the theory of evolution and sex education, had anything to do with school. So they pulled me out of school when I was very young. I had kindergarten in a Christian school, which is awesome because it taught me to read. And that's really been the saving grace for learning from there on out. But I did all the way from first grade through high school in the homeschooling. And then I didn't have the typical milestones that most people will have in public school. I didn't have the changing from elementary to middle to high school. I didn't have the shifting friends. I didn't have the different teachers to kind of mark off different periods of my life. I didn't have the sports or the milestones like dances or, homecoming or anything like that. So it's kind of a big blur from the age of about like 7 to 17. A lot of stuff went on, and, if we're talking about specific things, like if I'm with my family, I'm like, oh, yeah, but I have no real context for when that happened. It's very hard to pick out exactly when that was. It's just kind of one big continuous blur for about 10, 12 years there.
Got it.
So
I can understand that. I mean, for me, like I associate certain events in history and things like that with where I was in school, like, the Challenger exploding. I remember watching that in third grade in the atrium, things like that. I remember exactly where I was, but I can place that to a specific grade or things like that. So I can imagine that makes it a little harder to kind of reminisce and be nostalgic about things. You mentioned you didn't do any sports. Was that at all, or was that within school?
Yep, that was at all. I never had any real exposure to sports. My dad wasn't a real physical guy, so I didn't have any of the normal like baseball, football, basketball. None of that was ever really present in the house, but he would watch golf. I think I went golfing with him a few times. But didn't have any school exposure to sports, never picked it up afterwards. So jiu-jitsu really is like the first athletic endeavor I had other than, strapping on, an 80-pound rucksack and just going for miles and miles and miles. Going from that, from being pretty severely overweight, I was, I think, 250. I never did anything. I was very sedentary, just sat inside playing video games and, worked at McDonald's, which is great for your physical fitness. So I was about 250 when I signed up for the Marine Corps. I was 175 coming out of boot camp. And then, it was a pretty big shock, cultural shock and physical shock. So I've described myself as a mediocre Marine many times just because, I didn't have any physical basis to go from. So I was playing catch up for 4 years. I just, I could never quite keep up with the rest of the crowd. I was always like the tail guy on runs. I didn't have as much oomph to carry a rucksack around. It took me a good 2-3 years before I started really holding pace with everybody else. So I think there's a lot to say for getting your kids involved with sports and athletic endeavors, even if they don't really want to. Like, exposing them to it and just getting that base level of physical fitness that you need for health is a really big, you know, thing parents should be doing for their kids. It's a disservice if you don't.
Yeah, I try with my kids. I was successful for a very brief period of time. I had both my kids actually in learning some martial arts stuff at my friend's school. And then they kind of hit an age where didn't really feel the vibe of, you know, going on a regular basis and having that routine. I was able to keep my eldest involved with wrestling throughout his middle school and a little bit in high school and in hockey. Once, like, he played football and then he found hockey and he never stopped playing. Lazy about the practice aspect of it, but he at least plays hockey. And now that he's over 18, we play hockey together once a week. And that's just like my time in glory, is sitting on the bench watching him or being on the ice and playing with him. I absolutely fucking love that. With my youngest, I try to have him do things, but, you know, he's not completely, I can't say he's lazy by any sense of it, because if he's not in his room on his computer, he will go out on the trampoline and literally spend 2 or 3 hours just jumping on the trampoline completely in his own world. Absolutely.
Excellent.
Don't know how he does it, but I think his head would explode if he didn't have the trampoline.
Yeah.
So aside from essentially losing half of yourself in boot camp, what was your time in the Marines like?
It was really rewarding. I've always said that, like, when people thank you for your service, man, I was lucky. I was a peacetime Marine for the most part. I never saw combat. We'll put it that way. I responded to the USS Cole being bombed when I was on float, but then I was restationed. So I had signed papers. Most of my unit had signed papers to stay together. Coming off of float, we all had to extend our enlistment by a couple of months to make that happen. Cool. And then, pretty typical of the military, they fouled up the paperwork. So most of my battalion ended up getting farmed out, being ones and twos to different places. And I end up going from California, coming back to the East Coast of Parris Island, where I had done boot camp. This time I was working there and spent the next couple of years working at the rifle range in security. There's a couple of creeks that run behind the rifle range at Parris Island. It's semi-famous, if you're into the military, case of, you know, drill instructors taking kids back there and force marching through the swamp, and kids had drowned. So we kept people out of that area when the rifle ranges were actually actively firing. So, you know, that was the total of my experience. I never saw combat. I was in when 9/11 happened. I was at work, you know, like at the boathouse the day the towers came down, but I never saw combat. So whenever somebody says thank you for your service or asks how it was, I'm like, man, I got so much more out of it than I ever put into it. You know, I said I wrote a blank check for my life for 4 years, but the military gave me so much more back. Just the maturity it gave me, the growing up. I didn't learn all the lessons right then, but I was exposed to a lot of them, and it, you know, sad enough, it took until my mid-30s trying to kind of, you know, find myself, fix myself a little bit, picking up people like Jocko Willink and Jordan Peterson. I started to actually learn the lessons I had been exposed to back then. But, you know, either way, it made me a much better person, a much more mature man than I would have been coming out of, you know, as 22 if I just stayed in, you know, BFE Maine and, you know, worked at McDonald's with no real education. So. Yeah. Military to me was great.
I think with anything, any life experience, it sometimes just takes time to kind of marinate and kind of seep in before you start making the connections of how it applies and how you can use it to your advantage. So you only spent a few years in the Marines. What did you do upon becoming a civilian again?
Yeah, so coming right out of the Marines, I got a job in security for an energy company down in North Carolina. It was a second shift job, and I was with my first wife at the time, and it didn't really work out. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a great schedule. Shortly thereafter, her father was a service manager for a Mercedes dealership, and he said, hey, they're looking for an entry-level position as a driver for the parts department at my dealership. So I applied for that, and I'm not a car guy, never have been attracted to it, but I've been doing Mercedes parts for the last just over 20 years now, coming off of that. You know, through divorce, move, marriage, you know, all sorts of different stuff. It's been a good career for me. It allows me to do the things I want to do, support my family, and, you know, relatively stress-free. And it's been a good place put into play to play a lot of the lessons I learned in the military. So
I mean,
can't say I would wish to do it the same way again, but I don't really have any regrets.
Can't ask for more than that. I mean, sounds like a the dream that everybody has. When did you start transitioning, or when were you really introduced to Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Yeah, so 2015, I had come to a point in life where I had developed a bad relationship with alcohol. I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic. I never got to that point where, like, I had a constant urge to drink, or I couldn't go a day without drinking. But it had stopped serving me, and I was serving it. So I stopped drinking, and about the same time, I realized I still had a emotional stuff I hadn't dealt with from a previous relationship. And I finally kind of realized that, cut that off, and started to move past it. And woke up and realized, you know, I don't really care for who I am right now. But I recognized that, okay, this is where I am. This is my starting point. I stopped telling, you know, stories how I'm the hero. You know, everybody's the hero of their own story, you know. But eventually I sat back and said, well, you ain't much of a hero. So this is the starting point. What are we going to do from here? And I wanted to have a framework to build my life on to kind of improve myself and, you know, become somebody I would be proud to know. And I was looking around for quite a while, you know, getting into podcasts, kind of doing some self-help stuff. And, you know, BJJ kept coming up. And I knew I liked grappling. Just being in the military, especially cooped up on a ship for 6 months in this tiny-ass little place that, you know, you have like 40 guys in basically a locker room living and sleeping in that area. And, like, there's a lot of pent-up energy. So we would get into just rumbles, just people grabbing each other and wrestling around inside and, you know, getting a little dinged up, but nobody really getting injured and everybody having fun. And it was a generally a safe thing. So I knew I liked to grapple. And I had done other martial arts. I'd done, like, karate when I was a kid, Krav Maga and kickboxing when I got older. But none of them really had the same appeal. And none of them really had anything backing them up as far as you can change your life and through this in the way that I was looking for. So when I started to see that jiu-jitsu kept coming up for all these other people as having been a big major milestone and you could kind of use it as a springboard to do whatever you wanted, that's what I decided to pursue. And saw some videos with Marcelo Garcia and I mean, incredible practitioner of the art, but just the happiest guy, you know, just, you know, huge, huge smile. I'm like, man, I want to have whatever he's got going on. And I looked around and found, lo and behold, there's a Marcelo Garcia school here in Princeton. And I had actually run into the website for it a year or two prior to that when we first moved to the area. I remember being scared off because there was this young, curly-headed guy who looked like to be about 20 and this severe dragon lady-looking woman on the front page of it. Turned out it was Art and Emily. He was about, like, you know, 45, and she was just, like, the happiest, biggest smile and laugh kind of person you could ever meet. But it had turned me off at that point. But when I went back to look at it again, totally different website, different impression, filled out the little form, got a call back from Emily, like, 5 minutes later, talked to her for 10, 15 minutes, went in for a trial class, and, you know, it was like coming home, you know, just loved the atmosphere from the very first night and have never left.
Yeah, that's definitely the one thing that I think any school kind of needs, is that the unspeakable feeling that you're just home when you walk in. You feel welcomed. The people aren't fake. They're entirely genuine with, you know, it's not about what can I do for myself? You know, how can I beat this person up? It's how can I help them and help myself improve? Everything is very kind of family-based there. And I hope that that's the kind of environment and the philosophy that other schools have.
Yeah.
My introduction to jiu-jitsu goes back to 93 with the UFC and watching Hoyce Gracie just dominate and dismantle people that, you know, from that era, you would never think that he should be able to handle. I mean, Frank Shamrock was literally a fucking tank, and he just controlled him. And it's just like, that's amazing. And I just fell in love with it then. And I have a wrestling background. I wrestled all through middle school and all through high school. And there's a lot that I've taken from wrestling, that embracing the suck mentality, the stubbornness that kind of leads into perseverance kind of thing. And it's all these little building blocks that I think anybody could take from it, and it could benefit them. What I guess, was it that really kind of sunk its hooks in you that said, yeah, this is definitely what I want to spend my free time doing, getting choked out and stuff?
Yeah, it's a weird thing. Like when you tell people, what do you do? Well, I mean, I put on pajamas and I roll around with other men and we try to choke each other unconscious. And, you know, it's not a cult. And it's not a fetish club. You know, it's a martial art. But yeah, for me, it was the camaraderie in the most part. So we don't have the same kind of community we had 50, 80, 100 years ago that our parents and grandparents grew up with, where like a church or synagogue or temple or something was your community center. And you got your social cues from that. You've got, you know, your foundation you could fall back on all came from that. You got friends from it. You got family from it. You had guidance from it. You had somewhere, some framework you could use to give yourself left and right lateral limits of like, am I doing right or wrong in life? And you know, there's something to be said for either side of it. I'm pretty non-religious after the upbringing I had, but I think we've lost a lot of really good things. We threw the baby out with the bathwater as far as community and society went, with having that underlying structure, that smaller community within the community. And for me, that's what jiu-jitsu tends to be. I don't get anything spiritual from it, but almost all of the other social needs that I have, I get from jiu-jitsu. You get that camaraderie, that people, when they ask you how you're doing, they're generally asking, how are you doing? Not just like a nicety. It's people are interested in you. You're interested in them. You're actually concerned with them improving themselves, you improving yourself. How is your family doing? It's weird, but when you're wrapped up with somebody and they're dripping sweat in your mouth, you're pretty, it breaks down a lot of barriers really quick. And, I'm a bald white guy in his mid-40s, and people might not see me hanging out with young Asian folks and people from India and people from Arabian descent, and also straight, gay, everything in between, but we have that. It's a wonderful melting pot at PBJJ, and it's not something you're going to find just sitting around at your normal house or going to your normal events, and you don't have that thing that draws people in from a bunch of different societies. If anything, I think we're more inclusive and more diverse than you would have if we still had the same religious draw that churches provided. But yeah, that's what it does for me. It gives me the community and all the things that you would fall back on in a traditional society 100 years ago.
I think there's a lot of parallels between one's journey in jiu-jitsu and one's journey in life. And I think that's another thing that I really enjoy about the art, is just the totality of it all. The philosophical end that people kind of really dive into. For me, a good component is that after a real good roll, that just catharsis of being sheerly exhausted, both mentally and physically. Because if you've never done any type of grappling before, specifically something where you're basically playing physical chess, the mental fatigue and exhaustion comes out of that can sometimes be vastly greater than the physical exhaustion. And I encourage anybody to at least give it a try once. That just that mental game, the physical chess of it all, it kind of teaches you that there are consequences to your actions. if I put my arm out here, it might get snatched up and I'm going to be tapping soon. Or if I leave my neck uncovered, I'm going to be unconscious possibly. And like I said, just that pure exhilaration and exhaustion after a really good roll. And as something that I noticed with the general sense of community is, regardless of belt levels, everybody was working with everybody. Like some of the guys that I roll with and the girls I roll with knew that I had a wrestling background. So if they're trying to work on something and get a different understanding of it, there's a few times where they actually asked me, who I'm bare basic, I'm a white belt. I didn't even have a stripe at the time. And it was nice for them to say, well, you've been in this situation, what do you think? And that's just that sense of community, like you said, is just, it makes it that much more. You're a purple belt now, correct?
Yep.
So less than 10 years, you've moved from novice, complete novice, no stripe white belt, to a purple belt. And I'm sure close to that cusp of getting your black belt.
We'll see.
What do you enjoy most? Do you enjoy the instructor component, or just that sense of being a sheer student at the time?
I enjoy both in different ways at different times. You know, being an instructor has been a real challenge. It's really made me go back and examine, why do you do what you do? Can you actually teach people to do what you do? And is what you do even worth teaching? Luckily, so far, everybody seems to think yes. But it's very rewarding for me to be an instructor. I really enjoy being a student. It's nice to have the pressure off and just dig into it and just go for it on my own and work on things that I need to work on, whether it's, you know, techniques or, you know, more philosophical stuff where I'm using it to work through other issues in my life. But as an instructor, it's extremely rewarding to see other people coming up and helping them, like, maybe get over the hurdles that I went through a little bit faster. And that's something that jiu-jitsu's really kind of brought to life for me that I never would have expected earlier in my life, is I really like to be of service. Like, I work in customer service, and I hate that, but I like to be of service to people and just to fill needs, you know, where they're found. If I can fill a hole and, you know, do it and not be a detriment, I'm going to try and do that. And that's, you know, that's how everything I do in the morning has come about. There was people, we had Tuesdays and Thursdays originally, and they said, you know, other folks were saying it'd be nice if we had more time to roll. So, you know, I volunteered to do an open mat on Wednesdays as a lowly purple belt. And that's the great thing about the school too, is they'll give anybody a chance. As long as you seem to be a responsible adult and you're willing to try something, they're going to give you the tools to go ahead and try to make yourself better. And, you know, that's where it came from, and expanded out into other days. And then other people said, hey, you know what? I think I could fill a need here. And so Joe started teaching on Fridays, and then Nick took over after Joe moved back to evenings. And then, you know, I took a step and said, hey, there's a lot of people here who are coming who are just white belts and who don't really have a chance to get to the evenings or Saturdays, and they need more fundamentals than they're getting in these mixed level classes. And that's how we got the Monday and Wednesday fundamentals classes that we have now. And it's not because I said, you know, I'm an instructor, I'm great at this. It's that, you know, I think I can probably show you guys the basics and not screw you up, and it would probably be helpful to you. So yeah, it's just that to me is surprising, because, you know, I was the oldest of five kids, and, you know, you get to be a little bit selfish when, like, you know, the attention to the parents is so tightly divided. Like, I was a really selfish, you know, self-centered kid. So it's been interesting getting that side of myself revealed by the art.
What other aspects of your life do you think have been changed since you've really dove into jiu-jitsu?
I think I'm a better father and probably a better coworker, just because I'm far, far more calm than I used to be. I'm able to take a step back and breathe and deal with situations as they come up. It's very rare for me to lose my temper or raise my voice at home or at work, when I used to be, you know, a real tantrum, you know, throwing kid, and, you know, even to my early 20s. And so it's definitely helped me detach and, you know, mature myself more. But it's also, I'm working with my friend Joe Hannon, who, you know, is one of the co-owners and one of the instructors at the school. And he does, coaching on the side, not just jiu-jitsu coaching, but
personal development type stuff.
Yeah, personal development. He works with Emily Kwok and Josh Waitzkin. They work for very, very high level executives to help them become more efficient or excel more in their chosen area. And he's doing work with folks through jiu-jitsu in that same kind of realm. And something I've discovered since we started working together, and it's only been a week or two, is, you know, I knew I wanted to get better at jiu-jitsu, and I found that there seemed to be a block where I wasn't willing to do the things to get better, in that not to work hard, not to come in, spend the time, because I do those. It was the being more assertive and kind of advocating for myself on the mats. I think, well, it's great to be of service, and I think that was a really cool thing for me to learn. I've gone too far in the other direction. I used to be an extremely angry kid. And I remember chasing my middle sister around with, you know, we were always in each other's hair. We hated each other growing up. We were good friends now, but had a big walking stick, you know, a thick stick, you know, and I was chasing around with it, and I, you know, had swung it back, and I was just old enough to realize I would really hurt her if I hit her with this. And it scared the crap out of me. And I dropped it, walked away, and just kind of bobbled up my anger and aggression for the next 10, 15, 20 years. And that was a good thing. But it was also, you know, you pack that stuff away and you lose a lot of other things, like being assertive, being, you know, being able to have good confrontations, whether in relationships or just in life. Sometimes things are confrontational and you have to be able to step up to the plate and handle them effectively. And I wasn't really doing that. So that's something I've been wanting to change. And I found that really focusing on being a bit more assertive on the mats rather than just saying, no, it's okay, I will concede this pass, or, you know what, you're a lower belt, let's let you work and you can have the top. Time to change that. People were very good to me when I was a white belt and they smashed the crap out of me. And that's a good thing because they taught me how to be really defensive. And you know, that's the first thing you need to learn with jiu-jitsu is how do you defend yourself? How do you keep yourself safe? And then how do you work yourself out of that situation? And I've been doing a disservice to other folks by not giving them that opportunity. That's not to say I'm turning into an a-hole and just smashing people for the heck of it. I'm still cognizant of the people I roll with, the size difference and skill difference, but I'm now working specific things where, you know, for 30-second interval, I'm going to be the person on top. No matter what, I'm getting myself out from under this position, or I'm getting to the top, or I'm going to move to that more dominant position. And that's just the way it's going to be. If we're playing pass, protect, sweep, I'm passing. I'm sweeping. That's the way it's going to be. And, you know, reality is it doesn't always work out that way. You know, we've got some rather large and skilled people, but that's the intention. So the mindset is there for, you know, for that little bit. And kind of developing that rheostat, that ability to turn it on and off, that ability to dial it up and down is the thing I'm working on right now. And that's something I'd like to have in life too, is being able to be a little bit more assertive for myself at work, for myself, for my team, at home, just to, you know, have constructive arguments with my wife. You know, sometimes you got to have those. Yeah. It's a valuable part of a relationship, even if it's not fun.
I agree. There's a lot of things you mentioned that I kind of took a lot of joy in when I was coaching wrestling, and it's the notion of understanding that I can do things and wouldn't give the other person an opportunity to learn anything. And that's the position that I was in as a white belt rolling with some of the higher belts. And I relished rolling with people who were, didn't matter how much higher they were of me, just because I'm a firm believer that the only way to get better is to do whatever you're trying to get better at with people who are clearly better than you, because they're going to expose you to things that and positions that you would have never thought to put yourself in, ways to get out of them. You know, they might do something different than you would. And I think that's one of the other big components to jiu-jitsu that I love, is just the creativity of it all. I mean, if anybody that's really watched and looked at the progression of how Brazilian jiu-jitsu has developed over the last 30 years, especially the last 10 to 15, the explosion of creativity, of people just going, well, I was taught to get out of this position this way, but I notice sometimes my foot gets caught here, which kind of gives me a leverage point, and if I move this here, I can turn it this way. And it just breeds, it's this ever-flowing sense of creativity, which is just an amazing component to it. I kind of always threaten my kid, my youngest, because he likes to pester me on a daily basis, and I always threaten him that I'm going to fold his clothes with him in them, because that's one of the big, I guess, joke lines with jiu-jitsu and grappling in general. What are some of the aspirations you have, aside from obviously getting your black belt, which hopefully is sooner than later, but what are some of your other aspirations there, or things that you would like to see yourself accomplish in the next few years?
Well, with jiu-jitsu, I mean, become a better instructor, become somebody people can turn to and know that they're going to get a decent answer, and somebody who can help them develop their own answer. I would ideally be the thing. In life, I'd like to get to a more secure position at work, and you know, take on some bigger challenges. And really, I'm looking forward to the next. My daughter's going to be 14 next week, so like the next 10 years are going to be an adventure. So that's the thing I'm really looking forward to right now, is developing that relationship where my daughter, you know, starts to become an adult and have more, you know, interesting, deeper conversations with her. It's been probably the biggest change in my life has been becoming a father, and I'm just trying to be a better dad. That's what I'd really, you know, if take away jujitsu, take away my job, anything else, if I can not screw her up and then hopefully, you know, give her a good life, enrich her life, then that's what I would like to do.
That's I think every good parent's goal is, you know, not fuck up your kids any worse than life is going to make them, and you know, leave them at a better position than you were at their age. I try to engage my kids with pertinent political conversations that don't really go far. Sometimes my youngest always snaps, yeah, why do I care about it? I'm like, because that flippant ideal or attitude towards not caring about what goes on in your world and in your country is kind of one of the reasons why we're where we're at and the massive, yeah, shit sandwich that we're in. Because, you know, I grew up in a time frame where, you know, two topics that were completely taboo, three topics that were completely taboo were politics, religion, and sex. And, yeah, and because you can't, we weren't really allowed to have those conversations, to, you know, have those nice discussions and disagreements and good debates. I think we're now in a position where you still can't do that, but it's for different reasons, because instead of engaging in thoughtful and intellectual conversation and debate, it's just, you know, the cesspool of logical fallacies and insults, because you just can't talk to somebody when you have a different ideology. So I'm trying to get my kids to understand that and say, look, you got to be willing to get your hands a little dirty with some things and move on from that. Completely random question. Given this point in your life, who would you like to see, if somebody wrote a script about your life with you being the, obviously, the main character, who would you like to see play you, and who would narrate it?
Oh man. So, I mean, I think probably the best person I could pick to play me, because, you know, he's kind of getting old and doughy, would be Vin Diesel now. Not cool Vin Diesel, not like, you know, Triple X or early Fast and Furious Vin Diesel, like kind of old doughy Vin Diesel now. Narrating it's tough, man. I mean, you know, Morgan Freeman is the man, but I feel like I say motherfucker a lot, so it's probably Samuel Jackson.
I'm trying to think of who I would. I can't think of an actor that I look enough alike that I'm like, yeah, that could be plausible. But as far as as far as narrating, I think I got to go with Kermit the Frog, just because it's just either that or Charlie Brown, just because that's just how life has been with me. Football is ever being kicked out from or snatched away at the last second kind of thing.
Yes,
gotta love life and the curveballs today. Looking towards your experiences in jiu-jitsu, what are some of the big moments that you've had that kind of made you feel a sense of accomplishment, aside from obviously getting, you know, your belts, because that's a big accomplishment in and of itself, but what were some of the, like, little intermediary steps that you've had?
Yeah, you know, I kind of always figured when I started that, like, the first time I got a tap from somebody would be the thing that I would remember and just be super stoked about. I could not tell you the first time I got a tap from somebody. I remember it happening. I remember I was like kind of excited, and I couldn't even tell you when or who it was. But I do absolutely remember the first time I pulled off a scissor sweep, because, like, I was a white belt. I'd been a white belt for 6-8 months, and just like nothing worked. It's like I couldn't get anything to work. I was just there getting the crap beat out of me every night. And then finally it's, you know, I had a brand new person who was their first trial class, and we were just drilling and doing what Emily was instructing. And then I, without even thinking that it would work, I just, you know, I did the motion as she was describing it. I was like, that worked. That wasn't supposed to work. Wait, this stuff works. So that was a real big thing for me, was realizing, oh, you know, if you just do this long enough and just keep grinding at it and let, you know, the rough edges wear themselves off, you'll get there eventually. And the goal is to, you know, kind of wear those rough edges off faster and a little bit better, but, you know, just stick to it and you're going to get there. The other big things have been not really even my own accomplishments. It's been more the people I've encountered that have really been more milestones for me. You know, it's kind of a tradition, at least in our school, that when you hit black belt, you know, you get to say some words, have a bit of a speech about your journey to that point. And, you know, everybody has really cool ones. And I look at it and I remember seeing it the first time saying, I want to get that, not the belt. You know, the belt's cool, but you're going to hopefully have that belt for 30, 40 years. It doesn't really matter. You know, it's going to be just a piece of cloth. But I want to have had the really cool journey that they're talking about. I want to have had all those experiences that built up that got you to that point where, you know, somebody's wrapping that around your waist. And, you know, making friends with my buddy Ed Kinsella when we were both white belts, and he, you know, he had the gumption to come to me and say, "Man, I don't know what the heck I'm doing, and you seem to be about the same boat that I'm in. You want to get together sometime and we can try to figure this stuff out on the side?" And, you know, turned out we lived in the exact same neighborhood, so we got the Hibaru Jiu-Jitsu Bible and started working on some mats in my basement and just trying to figure it out. And that's what got me from white belt to blue belt. That was a long road, and just having him there and having that relationship built with him was a big thing. But I've made so many other great friends. You know, some have come, some have gone. A couple of years back, just coming out of the pandemic when things were starting to open up again, Joe had just kind of thrown it out there to a, you know, an Instagram message group that if some of us were like, "Hey, y'all want to, you know, just have some deeper conversations about stuff." And it was only myself and our buddy Mehdi who took him up on it. And we just started this little guys group, essentially. Just, you know, it wasn't intentional, but it developed really quickly to somewhere we could come and just have those hard, deep talks where, you know, you're a father, you're trying to get through this, you're trying to get through jiu-jitsu, you're trying to get through life, through work, through marriage. And like, that's been a ridiculously important milestone relationship for me. And it was just random chance that, you know, I was there with this group of people and, you know, took the universe up on that offer at that moment. So it's really, the milestones are cool. You know, getting belts are cool. You know, becoming an instructor is very cool, but it's the people. I mean, that the people, the relationships, the community is what keeps me coming back.
Yeah. I lost a friend of mine at the beginning of the year who was a Marine. I obviously can't help him anymore, but I was looking for ways that I could help others that were in his similar situation. And I reached out to Shannon and Joe, and they directed me towards an organization called the We Defy Foundation, which is an organization that uses Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu to almost as a form of therapy for those, mm-hmm. for Marines primarily suffering from PTSD and things like that, and giving them kind of an outlet to really work through these tough these incredibly tough things. And I actually just became an ambassador for them because the things that I've gotten and what Jiu-Jitsu has allowed me to kind of breathe and kind of rest of my own demons, for a lack of a better term. I think it's something that, obviously I'm a little biased, but I think it's something that, like, everybody should try, because there's the idea of learning to be comfortable in the uncomfortable is something that can really transcend every aspect of your life. You know, like I said before, the stubbornness leading to perseverance, lots of little things about being in situations, learning not to panic, learning how to breathe, and knowing that things are going to be okay. You just kind of have to get to the end of it. That's one of the big things that I've gotten from grappling and jiu-jitsu in particular, is just that learn to be calm, just go with the flow, and things are going to break one way, things are going to break another way, but life is always going to move on. It's how you kind of address what's coming at you, and that's gives you extra, I think to me, jiu-jitsu has given me extra tools to combat how I deal with things, mentally and physically. Have you brought your daughter, or at least thought you're bringing your daughter into jiu-jitsu? Has she tried it out at all?
Yeah, it's something I've exposed her to it. You know, we've done some jiu-jitsu on the mats down in the basement, and they did have I can't remember what they called it. It was like some strong daughters seminar, something that Emily ran a year or two ago. So she came to do that, and she's been interested, but she hasn't expressed like a burning desire to do it. And I've seen people like be of two minds about it. Some people think that this is like swimming. It's a life skill. You have to do it whether you like it or not. You know, it's like brushing your teeth. You're going to learn it. You're going to do it, you know, and even if you end up hating it, I'm going to make sure you have that skill. And then there's other people who are like, I really want my child to do this with me and grow up and enjoy it and carry on and do it for the rest of their life. And usually forcing your kids to do something is not the way to get that result. I'm probably more in that camp. My wife's not a big fan of it. She has, you know, not she's just not a fan of it. It's not her cup of tea.
Right.
So it's one of those ones where we want my daughter to find something that's physical that she enjoys doing just for her own sake. And so far, jiu-jitsu doesn't seem to be it. You know, maybe eventually it'll be something she'll examine if she gets a little bit older. But right now I'm at the point where I don't want to force her. You know, she's 14 next week, and that's, you know, we're very much head to head on a lot of things at this age. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, I'm sorry for your loss with your friend. And I think the way you're honoring him says a lot. And I think, I know you were a law enforcement officer and a first responder, and you've probably seen a whole lot of bad in the world, a whole lot of crap.
Yeah.
And the fact that you see the value in jiu-jitsu and working through it, and you know that it can help you deal with some of that stuff, I think says a lot. And you know, coming from the military background with me, I would definitely think that's going to work for them as well. You said just like that dealing with it, that pressure that and life goes on. I think that's a huge thing that people have a hard time remembering after they've gone through some really deep stuff, and just the vulnerability you have to have to get through jiu-jitsu. Like, you know, say, you know, I have to let go, I have to tap now, or something really bad happens. Sometimes you have to have that same vulnerability just to say, I need to talk to somebody. I have to let go now, or something really bad will happen.
I think you just, you really kind of nailed something there. And I didn't think of it until you phrased it that way. I think there's a lot of people, jiu-jitsu we kind of call them spastic white belts, and very few people like to wrestle and go with the spastic white belts, because they're going 100%. They don't think about anything. They just try to win, and they resist things. And they're also usually the ones that, when they're caught in a position, they're the ones that end up getting injured because they don't tap, or they're the ones that get choked out because they don't tap.
Yeah.
And I think for people who are really struggling with PTSD and depression, they don't tap. And by tapping, they're not tapping somebody on the shoulder and going, I need to talk, I need to vent this out, I need somebody to vent to. So I appreciate you putting it that way, because it's just made that connection in my head. I have seen some of the worst ends of humanity and what people do to each other verbally and physically. I've seen a lot of bad, but I've also seen a lot of good. I've been fortunate enough to deliver two babies in the back of an ambulance, and I let the good outshine the bad as best I can. But that ability to tap when I need to is something that I'm trying to get other people to understand. You know, similar battle with your daughter that you have. I've tried to get my kids, and I've always explained it to them as, I'm not trying to force you to do something. I'm forcing you into an experience so you can at least get it and make a informed decision if you want to continue doing it. I've been a firm believer throughout their lives of them growing up. One's now 18, and one's going to be 16 in, 3 months. but I've always tried to give them experiences in life, the things that they can build memories off of, concerts and, hell, the one night we literally drove 2 hours to go to a concert one night, and they had an absolute blast with it. So I've always been that, just try it and see if you like it. And like I said, my youngest kind of really hasn't found something that has worked with him. He hasn't gone back to martial arts or played hockey anymore. And my oldest kind of sticks to a little thing here and there. But to me, life is all about experiences. And the more that you can experience and the more fulfilled you can have, the more it helps out with other aspects of things. Like, I think the more you're exposed to, the more resources and tools you have to react to the good and the bad.
Yeah, I think that's a totally laudable and wonderful way to raise kids and to experience life. You know, there's that old overused adage about, you know, if you only have a hammer, everything's a nail. I think if you only have a hammer, you get really good at finding ways to use that hammer inventively. But sure, it's nice if you can have a whole tool set. You know, if you give people all these different experiences and changes, even changes of scenery. That was something like, because I grew up homeschooled, so, and in Maine, so it's a very small cloister, didn't have much experience in life or just even with America at that point. But having seen half the globe, then moved, you know, across the continent, up and down the continent, just getting your kids out and showing them that people live differently. There's a whole lot of other pieces of life out there. You should check them, some of them out. It's a huge thing.
Yeah. I try to get my kids to understand, based off of some of my own experiences, like they'll have an interaction with somebody, and usually it's a shitty interaction. And it's what I try to get them to understand is you can't let things like that bother you. It doesn't have a, don't let it sink its hooks in you, and don't let it kind of fester in your head. Process it and move forward. If it doesn't physically hurt you, and you know it doesn't have a lot of gravity to it mentally, just kind of let it go and move on, forget about it, and you'll pack that void with something good eventually. But being a parent is hard.
Yeah, it's I heard somebody recently describe it as it's the hardest job you'll ever get that you have no training for, and there's no manual.
Oh yeah, because you always try to do better, you think you know better, and then something happens, goes, oh, shit, how do we deal with this one?
Yep.
I did read something, a quote that it's something I've sent my kids a few times, and they haven't, I don't think it's really clicked in there yet. But a father is the only man that's going to be more proud when you are better than him.
Yeah.
And that kind of resonated with me that, yeah, most people that they might say they're proud of you, friends and things like that. They might say they're proud, but there's always some underlying jealousy and nonsense that goes on with that. But I truly believe that, you know, the father is the only person who genuinely wants to see you be better than he ever was.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that mindset is maybe not as prevalent as it used to be. I mean, there's a lot of kids without dads, a lot of deadbeat dads out there, but I think it's still enough a part of our culture. I think it's what America, you know, became great on, is people came here and wanted to see their kids have a better life and do better and go on to bigger and greater things. And I think that's still what drives a lot of us. You know, we talked briefly about politics, and it's such a dichotomy now. There is no middle ground. It's so left, so right, that, you know, you get lost in the noise. But I think, you know, most people live in the middle, and most people want to make the world a better place. They want to make their world a better place for their kids, if nothing else, even if they aren't thinking on a big national global scale, they want it to be a better place. And I think that's, like I said, that's a great view. I don't think I've ever thought of it that way, that, you know, your father is the one man who's really going to be truly proud of you, not for any accomplishment of their own, but just for your own sake.
Yeah. So since we got through all the gravity, the heavy stuff, I'm going to shift towards some of my ridiculous questions to end the show. So the first one is, would you rather live under a bridge or in a condemned building?
Ooh, being in the military, I've lived in a condemned building. It's not that bad.
I think a condemned building would be much more conducive to survival, just because you're protected from the elements for the most part. You don't have to get wet. You can at least not get wind burned and all that other fun stuff. So I think the building it would be my answer as well.
Yep.
Would you rather be more creative or more intuitive?
I would rather be more intuitive. Creative is really cool. I'm not a terribly creative person. I've always wanted to be more creative, but I think if you have to go through life, being intuitive is going to get you through a lot more situations, a lot more smoothly, and just going to give you a better path.
I don't think I can answer that, because I think for the very reason you just said, that intuition is the way to get you through. I think creativity can get you through stickier situations as well. It's just a different avenue.
Sure.
But I definitely agree that in some ways I think I would rather be more intuitive than creative too, just because you're kind of predestined to get your way through things, be a little more perceptive to, you know, the situations around you and how to adapt to them. But I really like that answer. Would you rather be king of England for the day and enjoy the benefits and their wealth, or have the ultimate super fan adventure of your dreams? And if it went with the latter one, what would that be?
You know, I have no idea what the super fan adventure would be. I've never actually, like, I have no interest in being the King of England. You see really rich people, celebrities, people of power. It's never appealed to me. So I would be the super fan adventure person. And yeah, it would probably be training jujitsu with Jocko Willink and then going out first date.
I wholeheartedly agree with not wanting to be in that position of authority. I have this mental bug that says that people in that position of authority and power should, they kind of have an obligation to speak honestly and truthfully, regardless of where that might put them on a political spectrum or a social economic perspective. And I don't see that happening, but just the sheer scrutiny of everything that famous people do on some level of it, you know, it's kind of what you signed up for.
Yeah.
You know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get scrutinized for everything. But at the same time, you know, there's some situations where I feel bad for some of these rich and famous people where they're just, they don't have any sense of privacy. But with that being said,
yeah,
I think I would also follow the path of a, you know, super fan thing. And God, I've so many different ideas of what that could be, you know, rolling with certain people or a certain concert or things like that. But with that being said, any parting words before we get going?
No, I think we touched on everything. I guess if you've never tried jiu-jitsu, come try jiu-jitsu. I teach a fundamentals class really way too damn early in the day on Mondays and Wednesdays at 6 a.m. But come to Princeton Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu if you're in the area. We love all sorts of different people, all sorts of different walks of life. We're very friendly. So, and other than that, thank you very much for the podcast. Thank you for taking on the ambassadorship with We Defy Foundation, man. That's really, really cool.
Thank you for coming on and telling us a little bit about yourself. I appreciate it. I look forward to heading to Mass with you.
Same.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Adding Context. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or visit us at addingcontext.com. You can also support our show via Patreon. Send us feedback and show ideas to podcast@addingcontext.com.